December 25, 2020, it's the Watt for Pedro Show.
This is your captain speaking.
All right, people. Happy 25 Friday. Merry Xmas Day. It's all deja vu all over again. You don't know because it's the first time you're hearing this. But start off with John Coltrane doing Peace on Earth. The one most people know is the Live in Japan one. But this is and later on it got orchestration and Alice put on some harp. She's got piano solos here though. I got an interview with her, but she was amazed when John Coltrane asked her to join the band. Anyway, to the point today, Brother Matt at the Love Grotto, Merry Xmas to him. Pleasure point. Went quarantino mode, but I'm not man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their righteous Skype invention. I got Mr. Rick Weaver and Zach Coons with me. And Zach, are you still in Cosby, Tennessee?
No, I'm actually in Columbus, Ohio. I just moved.
Okay. A little update there. Now let's ask Mr. Rick Weaver, are you still in San Antonio, Texas?
Yes, sir. Down in San Antonio here.
Okay, so some things stay a little bit stable.
Yep, definitely. More and more so these days down here.
Okay. And yeah, I got some friends who just moved there from Houston and stuff. And I used to play a place there all the time called Taco Land.
Yeah.
Terrible story. The boss got killed. In fact, I wouldn't even play the town again until Jeff Smith, Sauce Tex Record, a good cat. He sings for the band Hickoids and Gay Sportscasters. And he brought us back there and brought me to play again with my missing man. But anyway, for today, I'm glad I got both you guys, even though you're in both different towns and I'm here in Pedro. We're doing a three-way to celebrate this joint venture you guys put together. It was called the Introduction to the Transmogrification of Mr. Claus, and we're going to play the whole piece, but I thought I'd let you guys prepare the listeners with some insights from each of you since you both came together to put this together.
Rick, you want to start it out?
Holy moly, I mean, the content's yours, so why not? I'll start. Zach sent me this little Christmas story that always been a fan of his words, and this one really hit home. I've tried to embrace the spirit of merriment and giddy, absurd, jolly, fun every day. So, and that is not at all what this writing is, I guess. It's deceptively so. There's moments that I thought I'd laugh and then moments that I thought I'd cry. So I was glad to get this in my hands and I tried to just throw some music in the backdrop there. Trying to think, I guess.
We're doing a little spiel here where it starts with you, Rick, but actually the whole adventure started with Zach's story.
Yeah, I'm taking the ball when I really should be passing it over to him.
Well, he asked you to start, so that we get the piano wire and lynch him by the balls with it. Figuratively. But that's interesting because I was going to ask that. What was the genesis? So it was the story. Zach, you want to, without giving anything away, right? Because we're going to do the whole give the people the peace. Just something to fucking fortify them with. Prepare them for.
Sure. Well, I guess it's hard to talk about it without talking about the story for me. But I mean, I guess one thing I would mention is how eerily prescient it actually became about 3 months after we released it. We released it on the first day of January of 2020. And then 3 months later, an actual really big part of the story came, sort of came full circle. And we both realized it was, we caught on to some really unholy zeitgeist, I would say, with this one. And I don't know. Yeah, somebody wrote about it as like a hero's journey through the underworld in reverse somehow, or something along those lines, which I thought was pretty kind of tickled my funny bones. I think that
you mean we're talking like Aeneas or Orpheus or Dante or.
Well, I guess that's dealer's choice.
And then as far as reality goes, you guys were kind of prophetic without knowing it?
Yeah. I think we tapped into something that, or maybe called, hopefully not, but something called something into being that, that shouldn't have been, you know. Art is a kind of curse, you know, and curses can be both good and bad. There's white curses and dark curses, and maybe this is a little bit of both. But
no, you're right. Just like with luck, right? People always think luck is good, but no.
That's right.
I guess there's three kinds. There's that dumb luck, too.
That's the kind I find I have the most.
Look, there was a weird coincidence with me, too. The last tour I did before the sitch, you know, I was tired of getting sick, so I didn't want to shake anybody's hands. Some dudes got pissed, but I didn't get sick. Two months later, the whole country does, though. So sometimes it's weird like that. But you know what? Let's speak about the fucking piece after the listeners get to experience it, okay? Then we only
that sounds work. Great.
Yeah, let's do that. People, here's the transmogrification of Mr. Claus.
This album, film, libretto, and audiobook that you're holding in your hand is an exploration of the last days of Santa Claus as we know him, charting his fumbling and heroic exploits as he simultaneously contracts and nearly spreads the plague along his expansive gift-giving route, and single-handedly rids us of that particular strain of virus once and for all, by virtue of his thudding, aged, tender, immutable heart. Along the way, he grows a few arms, rips Chevy Chase a new one, explains why the polar ice caps are melting, has his blood slurped up by an Arctic fox, dances to Calypso music while blackout drunk, gets his cabin destroyed by riderless stallions, and that's just for starters. A little milk and cookie appetizer, if you will. Along the way, you'll be entranced by a rich ensemble of familiar characters, including Mrs. Claus, Rudolph, the Elves, Peanut the Dog, Martin Short, a deranged murderer on the loose in Cleveland, Ohio, Wormwood and Mugwort, Harry of Harry's Bar Notoriety, Shitting Mice, Lord Invader, Lee Hazelwood, tenement house in the 1940s Detroit, the San Antonio River, the fox in the hen house, and an anthropomorphic sun that nearly slaughters every human being on planet Earth, and many more. Joining this array of some of the biggest names in the business are Zach Koons, who wrote the script and serves as the narrator, and Rick Weaver, who composed the score, both of whom figure prominently in this wholesome little psychodrama / feel-good family comedy for the whole family, provided that everyone in your family is over the age of 18. Thank you for inviting us into your hearts and homes as we answer that timeless question. Is that you, Santa Claus? The answer is, you betcha, pal, and I'm here to save your butt, and also to endanger the survival of your species, but most importantly, I will save your lives, so let's forget all about that other part. All of us here at Team Capra Productions would like to wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, and offer you a reminder that no man is a failure that has friends. Shit. Mice are a going concern in the North Pole, and he has the only warm home, so they burrow in through the vents, desperate to escape the endless cold. The elves live in squalor. It's always been that way, and I guess it always will be. Santa likes to eat in bed and watch a Christmas movie or three, and the crumbs from his food crumble into his wispy, frazzled white beard. The mice eat them when he's asleep, and they shit where they eat. Oh, bubonic plague, come and clean up our mess. Santa is dreaming. Santa dreams of tenement house in a 1940s Detroit. Santa dreams of automobiles endlessly driving on curveless paved roads. Choral music is playing, but it is in Latin, and Santa doesn't speak Latin. Omni correctum? Santa has learned to live with the mouse shit, with the plague, with the dreams of tenement housing, with the choral music, with the baubles and trinkets filling up landfills, with the medicated children growing sadder every year. Santa has learned to live in the ruins of a world falling down around our ears. Oh, Santa, oh, wild God, come into our cities and teach us how we can live with mouse shit in our beards and on our clothing. Watch a Christmas movie with us all. Bring us the plague and hallucinations. Make us stop speaking Latin. Fill our immense, broken, tender hearts with love for our neighbors. Santa, I may be sorrow's sickly stepchild. I may be longing and aching, but I know in my secret heart that is trembling with unspoken love that I am not beyond repair. But maybe it is so that the plague will be my salvation. Santa dancing to Calypso music in his living room, half drunk on peppermint schnapps with a crazed look in his eyes. Lord and Vader sing to us of the brown girl in a ring that looks just like the sugar on a plum, plum, plum. After the fall, what is there but Calypso and schnapps and half-remembered dreams? I dance to forget, but I have an awful habit of only remembering the good times. Then I pop on Lee Hazelwood because he has the unsurpassed ability to get the bile flowing. Santa in his red and white underwear, paunch drooping toward the inner core of the earth. Just tell me this, Santa, and I'll be quiet for once. Why does my Vallejo book smell like a hospital? Was God sick on the day I was born, too? Howl on out there, raging winds of the apocalypse. Raise up some new life form with myths not shrouded in endless murder and incest. I won't forget that bright morning 25,000 years ago when I crawled out of a freezing alpine lake in search of a cave, oxygen burning in my lungs. Scrawling on the walls of a cave, a fat man cloaked in red and white, riding a flying reindeer. The white was my frozen flesh, the red was my steaming blood, and I just bet you can guess what the brown for the reindeer was. That is how we're all called into being. Somebody drawing our likeness on the walls of forgotten caves. Someone scrawled the likeness of a wolf and poof, here I was. I've just learned to walk upright in the last 50 years or so, but I still howl with pleasure and pain. Santa crumbled on the living room floor, too drunk to dance another step. Mrs. Claus helps him to bed while Lord Invader extols the virtues of Pepsi Cola. Santa huddled over a craps table at the Hollywood Casino in Columbus, Ohio, massive stomach flopped over the side and nearly resting on the green felt of the table, obscuring some of his fellow gamblers' views. What can you say to Mr. Kringle? It's his day off. There's only one way to roll at midnight, and that's the hard way, Jack. Well, I'll tell you something I've learned. You gotta roll the dice in this wild old world. There's a new shooter, and I'll be doggone if it isn't Saint Nick himself. Just as he starts clacking those numbered bones in his hand, praying for a rainy day, we hear the shrill shriek of a slaughtered calf. You're never gonna believe this, Buster. The owner of the casino has a vast agricultural concern and a really rotten sense of humor. So just try and put blood and alcohol and hope for a better life together and see what you have. North America's first and only casino / abattoir. The butcher is kicking the chips off the blackjack table and grabbing the bull by the horns in the realest way imaginable. Open up your jowls, Ohioans, because it's time to eat. Casino to table dining, giving new meaning to the word localized. Let me freshen up your Bloody Mary, miss, and how about a viscera cocktail for you, pal? Light on the gore, huh? Everyone has left the craps table except for Santa and the dealer. All bets are off. Oh, tumble on out there, hurtling through blood-choked ether. One and one. Santa snake eyes. And now I say with trembling conviction, everyone's a winner when Santa comes to town. Santa taking some part-time work at Harry's bar to pass the time and get out of the house a little while. I am dumb, Harry. I overslept again. I used to sleep 300 days a year. Now if I oversleep, I know what you'll do. Last night, Santa grew three arms. If he's late to work one more time, Harry's going to paint in bronze, get an altar of human skulls to set behind him as a backdrop, a throne with arms of stuffed snapping alligators vomiting a bouquet of swamp orchids from their gaping jaws, and he'll just sit there sagely and greet customers. Santa doesn't want that. I mean, who would? And just imagine how crooked he's walking with three arms on one side of his body and only two on the other. Maybe he'll grow another tonight. Wouldn't it be awful if he grew two? Oh, streams of jet blue, holy fire with sunset shades circling behind. Voices in every language. Santa with thousands of arms, always one more on the left side of his body. Everyone coughing up blood, wormwood and mugwort. The human heart, a bear in a freezing poison stream, watching fish float by belly up. Harry's bar left empty with tumblers full of orb weaver spiders on every table, ready for a swallow of pathogenic blood to give them one glorious glimpse of the victorious plague swimming in the tributaries of the circulatory system. Santa filling five glasses full of Michelob Light at once with his nimble, dexterous, extra appendages. Harry, let the man sleep in. Santa is good for business. Santa studies his face in the mirror and vomits antifreeze green bile in the bathroom sink. Santa collapses again. He's been doing that a lot lately. Oh, long-suffering Mrs. Claus, painfully faithful. To have the plague nestling in your cell walls, but not to be able to die. To collapse several times a day with the elves and the reindeer looking on. Rudolph's anthropomorphic look of concern is palpable, and he asks, in his inexplicable quaking falsetto southern drawl, Mrs. Claus, what's wrong with Santa? And what to tell that simple-hearted talking reindeer? That he likes his schnapps a little too much? That he falls asleep with food and mouse shit in his beard? That his aching, restless heart longs to look in the mirror and vomit and collapse? That although he is deathless, he has an incurable fatal disease? That we can carry within our own body an incomparable host defense system and an adaptive, malignant microorganism is the biggest Christmas miracle of them all, in Santa's professional opinion. The endless techniques our species has developed to give each other pleasure and pain. One plant transports you to some divine, mysterious realm beyond the reaches of the cosmos. Another paralyzes your vital organs. And underneath it all, where even the most sophisticated microscopes fail to observe, viruses are mutating and developing new cunning ways to rid this blazing blue-green garden planet of the parasitic human organism. Of a sudden, half a dozen wild, riderless horses stampede into Santa's cozy hut. They crowd in, smashing all the carefully collected baubles and trinkets to smithereens. Mrs. Claus stands stoic and immobile in the tiny kitchen, while the herd of horses snort and deliver powerful kicks from their haunches, knocking holes in the walls so the north wind can ravage the cabin with its savage, unyielding cold. Santa is collapsed, missing the best part of this story, white tank top covered in emerald-colored vomit. Rise from your feverish slumber, O Santa. Nobody should miss the world falling down around their ears. The year is 1986, and Chevy Chase has just snorted 180 milligrams of yellow coke, the kind that smells like kerosene. Several hours earlier, he took 1.5 grams of an experimental Russian anxiolytic that the space program gave to their astronauts. He is on the set of Three Amigos in his trailer, and he is wearing a Santa Claus suit, but he just can't remember why for the life of him. Santa isn't perfect, but mixing sedatives and stimulants, come on, Chevy, you're a rookie. Just admit it. Oh boy, now we're all in for it. Santa stumbles onto the faux desert set and asks a stunned Martin Short where Chevy's trailer is. Martin stammers out a half-hearted joke that I won't bother repeating. Save your little vaudeville song and dance routine for the saps whose lives are so small and sad that they'll go to desperate lengths to laugh so that they can hold back their bitter, grievous tears, if only for an hour and a half or so. Martin feebly points toward a weather-beaten trailer in a dimly lit enclave. Chevy is shivering, breathing shallow, panicked breaths, and is soaked to the bone in sweat. Let me tell you something, you bloated, crazed, funny man. There is a fox loose in the hen house, and I am that fox. I am also the hen. I am also the house. I am also the unseen hand that unlatches the lock and lets the fox sneak in. I am the carnage and the gore. I am the eternal hunger of the fox. I am the atavistic, paralyzing fear of the hen. I am the unhatched egg. How far back can you remember, Chevy? You are one step removed from the man lost in the desert, desperately trying to build a fire before the unforgiving, never-ending, moonless night tumbles down from the heavens. You are starving to death, and there is a crudely skinned desert sidewinder snake in your satchel. You've got to build that fire, Chevy. But don't worry, because Santa Claus is coming to town. I know what the polar ice caps are, and so does Santa. They are the Wren's sorrowful song, saying once, I need you, twice, I need you, and the third time, do you need me? And there's never an answer to that last line. Or I'll concede that maybe they are a blue jay fanning out its tail feathers before it shits on the young boy waiting on the school bus. Whatever we deeply desire is the yeast that turns the wine into vinegar, we finally discover. Santa in his underwear in the snow in the pitch black night, and in that darkness we can finally see why every painting of Jesus has Judas standing nearby. The cold doesn't bother Santa, neither does the darkness, and the snow sneaking into his underwear is the greedy soul sharpening its teeth so it can make a meal of our twin brother. Santa has been attacked by a starving polar bear, lacerations covering the length of his body, torn clothing. The polar bear fainted from the exhaustion of hunger before he could finish the job. It's just Santa and his steaming blood and the dying polar bear and Mr. Northwind himself on the endless frozen tundra tonight. Even the moon and the sky had enough sense to hide behind the clouds. Santa isn't worried. He knows that Mrs. Claus will round up some elves and they'll march out into the dark night led on by the airport beacon on the end of Rudolph's snout. He's just trying to stay conscious so that he can hear their cries. An Arctic fox approaches cautiously, sniffing the frozen air. He licks Santa's wounds, blood staining the fur around his mouth. Santa is too tired to brush him away and resigns himself to the sandpaper tongue lapping up his gushing immortal blood. Of a sudden, the fox lets out a cry, doubles over, and begins convulsing. Untangles from the clouds, and Santa can see a half a dozen rats chewing their way out of the fox's intestines, bowels spilling out into the snow. Santa, to be honest, I think it's going to be a long night. Long before human beings had armed themselves with the weapon of conceptualized linear time, the sun grew arms and legs and walked purposelessly through a garden where mammoth feline creatures with the long, wobbling necks of hissing serpents grew in endless rows, remaining tethered to the ground and shriveling and perishing from lack of rain. The sun gnawing on the bleached white bones of the human animal, dissolving flesh by virtue of its proximity. The heart of the macrocosm, the sphere of equilibrium, the imperishable, restless spirit, master of the lodge. Santa squatting in the desert, digging a mass grave for the gnarled, scattered bones. What the sun cannot digest, it purifies. And all of us are taking a little Saturnalian sweat bath for the next few lifetimes. The oyster, the bee, the silkworm, and the flax plant. Santa and the wandering sun sitting together in the cool of the evening. Trees are on fire and dried wheat is burning all around them. Santa says to the insatiable sojourning sun, only half a dozen beings burdened with the weight of consciousness have survived your appetite. Crawl over here, crawl along the length of my back. Float down the stream of my piss like a palm frond, a mile-wide crawling river. Coil around my thighs while I stand eternally triumphant on the wings of birds who have the tongues and eyes and sneering lips of young girls whose entire family has died. Do all of this or climb back into the vaulted, varnishless cosmos. Spit out the venom that you've been drinking from the glands of serpents. The sun begins reeling, falls backward into the flaming wheat, gives birth to a small city, grows the genitals of a man and woman simultaneously, heart throbbing with love and tenderness. The fire consumes the sun's flames. The sun reaches up toward the solar ladder and drags itself up rung by rung into the whirling, whirring universe. What can I tell you? Santa saved the day. Santa waking up in the land of milk and honey only to realize he's been there all along. Santa loving his neighbors, the elves, at least as much as he loves himself, which isn't all that much, but you never know when the barren heart will be flooded by the red gold oil of unearned grace that hides in the roots of the elder tree. Santa running down the icy, empty streets of the North Pole, crying out, "I love you, you old building and loan." And even though the North Pole doesn't have a building and loan, I think anyone whose heart has been flooded by a surge of unexpected hope knows what that crazed old life-drunk buzzard is bellowing about. Year by year, our lives the same death and resurrection, needing a fresh dose of salvation every moment. Every morning, new stars being born outside our windows. The work of creation is never done. Birth and death just reflex, ending in the impossibility of ending. Oh, cry out into the lonesome corners of our little broken heart, Santa. Tell us how the unseen worlds work. Tell us how even warped, frustrated old spiders like Mr. Potter can get a glimpse of something beyond his own private little meanness when the cleaning woman brushes by wearing the same perfume that the girl who put her hand on his thigh when he was 19 wore. Terrified and full of terrible, torturous, shameless, eternal love. Santa pulls the affable, anthropomorphic, drawling Rudolph so close to him that he can see the lines of still lips, steaming down the fine hairs of his upper lip, and proclaiming with abiding faithfulness, affection is the cure for the plague. And even if Zach Coons is standing in the middle of the street in Cleveland, Ohio, screaming, "Kill me, murderer," and the immense unfeeling savagery built into the core of the world sharpens its knives in the kitchen, the spell affection weaves of meritless mercy tames the cruelty for another night. Santa rings a little dinner bell, and an angel gets its wings. Santa slowly undoes the buttons on his robe and carefully drapes it over his bedpost. He looks in the mirror, clutching shears in his trembling right hand. Off comes the beard. The mustache is here to stay, Jack. He says his goodbyes to the elves and to the reindeer, deliberate, tender farewells. I know you've seen a grown man cry. Well, it looked exactly like that. Santa and his blushing bride climb into the sleigh. Harness Rudolph cranes his neck ruefully and says in his cartoonish drawl, "Where to, Santa?" Santa looks deep into those eyes made crystalline with tears and says, "Rudolph, I'm a longhorn now. I'm going to rustle some cattle and see what those learned men in the universities have to teach me. Maybe I'll even learn to sing a few bars of the Yellow Rose of Texas. Who's to say?" Rudolph's trot turns into a gallop that turns into a takeoff, and it's Texas, here we come. Santa jumps through some hoops, legally changes his name to Rick Weaver, graduates from UT Austin with the highest honors, I might add, and is a happy man by all accounts. He hired a crack ghostwriter to add some oohs and some ahs to his account of when he grappled with and overcame a plague that would have turned all our insides to mush. Tenderness and affection is the only thing that can conquer a plague, my friends, and they're the only things that are going to save our species. Ghostwriter's name is Zach Coons, and guess what? I'm also the narrator of this album. How's that for a twist? And now you've listened to this whole album. Rick is walking by the San Antonio River with Mrs. Claus, whose name is now Nikki, and his dog Peanut. The sun dives slowly into the river, and it's a cool night in Texas. Rick and Nikki were smart enough to bring lightweight jackets along, and I have a feeling Peanut is going to be A-okay. And just like that, this album is over. And Santa says, amen. Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show. That's it. Was that a ride, people? Was that a ride? That was a ride. I'm going to give you all the parts. Introduction to the transmogrification of Mr. Claus. It's all by Coons and Weaver, understand. Santa locates a bubonic plague in the deathless body. Then Santa is dancing to Calypso music while blackout drunk. I don't know how the fuck you do that, but Santa gambles his cares away in the casino in Columbus, Ohio. Well, I know how you do that. Santa grows three arms, giving him an odd number of arms. A priori. And Santa's cabin is invaded by riderless stallions. Santa rips Chevy Chase a new one. Fucking, that's happened. Santa knows why the polar ice caps are melting. Santa dissuades an anthropomorphic sun from wiping out the human race. Grazie. Santa teaches the plague a thing or two about mercy. Santa changes his name to Rick Weaver, graduates from a prestigious university, and is on his way straight to the top with his buddy Zach Coons after he records this very album. And what better way to end a piece with a fucking summation like that, huh?
Yeah, I think that's that prophetic part you were talking about there.
Right.
Yeah, but, when you became yourself, Rick, before you were Santa Claus, and now you became yourself and graduated from San Antonio University.
Yeah, I was glad that through your words I was able to get back to my old self.
There was this weird opera, I think they're called Genesis, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Yeah.
You know about this, where the guy finally figures out that his brother is actually him?
I didn't actually know that that was the story. I've listened to The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. I didn't actually know that was a story, though. I can't understand Peter Gabriel's lyrics.
Yeah, I've probably listened to that album about 1,000 times, but never been able to follow the story.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it's kind of a Puerto Rican guy in New York City, right? Rail.
The Grand Parade.
And he's got his brother, John. I mean, this guy gets castrated. He goes the whole nine yards, right, to figure out that his brother is him. Or maybe there's even a more basic understanding, because he goes, it is chicken, it is eggs, it is in between your legs.
This is all news to me. I've probably listened to that album 1,000 times too. I've never put that together.
Well, you know that it was put together weird. If we're going to talk nuts and bolts on getting something together, the words came way after, and then the band got pissed off because they said he sang because he wasn't with them, and he did it way after the fact. I think another country even. Then it kind of splits the band up. They said he sang in all the parts where it's supposed to be instrumental. And then he was but you know, he had kind of an anti-Mohawk at that time. Maybe he was just in a contrary mode.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was a teenager. It was like in the, 73, 74 or something like that. But it was just the idea of making a big story that can't fit in a song. I was introduced to this, actually not by those guys. There was something on Happy Jack called A Quick One Ways Away by The Who.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing that really inspired me to do operas. It wasn't Tommy or Quadrophenia, really. It was A Quick One Ways Away. The idea where you got so much you can't fit into a short song, so you got to make a big thing made out of many parts. Now, Zach, when you wrote the story, were you thinking music?
Yeah, I think so. I wrote it with Rick in mind. We were talking about doing some. I mean, he and I have collabed. We had already made like three or four albums before then, and we had been talking about collaborating. I think maybe before I started talking with Rick about it, I had written the first one that came to me in a fever dream. Because I was living in this, I was living in this house that didn't have heat in rural Kentucky, and I actually woke up with mouse shit in my bed. It wasn't because I had I had crumbs of food in my beard, but then I thought, well, what's causing this? Why am I waking up with mouse shit in my bed? And then I don't know how that translated to a story about Santa Claus, but then I had that written though. I already had that part written, I think, before I started. I think I sent that to Rick first, and I was maybe that one and maybe the one about Lord Invader, the Calypso one. Maybe I had those first two written.
Well, you know, the idea of mystery, obviously there's mystery behind Santa Claus and his little journey here, and then there's the mystery of the rat turds. So maybe that's the parallel universes that are rubbing up on each other.
Yeah.
Now, I got to tell the listeners, you know, if we played the fucking Cincinnati Reds in 1990. That was an earlier collaboration by you guys, right?
Well, yeah.
After. The 1990 Cincinnati Reds would have been after the Santa Claus album.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is a little Boys of Summer one, right?
Yeah, that's right. We wrote, I was finishing up the 1990 Cincinnati Reds as Rick was finishing up the music for the transmogrification of Mr. Claus.
Okay. So,
That one came first, and then the 1990 Cincinnati Reds. That would have been our second one of the last.
Yeah, so actually this piece here informed that piece.
In a way,
as far as you guys working together.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Mr. Claus one is definitely sort of the beginning of the formulaic thing we've been doing the last year. Before we were doing just going to the Bonehead Boneyard and howling a cappella Christmas carols and stuff.
We advertised we have an album where we advertised this product we called Banana Ham. So Rick, I guess that would have been almost the start of what we ultimately ended up doing. We made up this fake product called Banana Ham, and we did 9 commercials for this product. Where Rick did the music and I did overdubs and sometimes some little bit of music over top of it. But I think, I would say, what do you think, Rick? I'd say that was like kind of the beginning of what
we Yeah, that's true. That's true, though. The sales thing. Yeah, we were really on to something then, and I think we've strayed away from that. I mean, Banana was just a great idea. And there were a lot of follow-ups.
Whoops. I didn't mean that. But banana ham. Are we talking some kind of food product?
Yeah. Pretty much what it sounds like. brought straight to your home. Yeah, banana ham. I think we rebranded it as a holiday gift guide, so we could ship them out. There's, you know, you could do lots of things with banana or ham, but... Banana ham works for me.
Is the creative flow one way? Like, does the story come from Zach, and then you start visualizing it musically, Rick? Or do you does it go back and forth? Is there a dynamic, you know, back and forth?
Dynamaham.
Yeah, dynamism. Dynamism. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm an asshole.
Man, it's been pretty much different every time, I'd say. Right, Zach?
I think so. I'd say I'll send Rick a few. He'll start getting music together. And I'll start hearing some music before I have it finished. Rick's right. It's different every time, I think.
And what about the way you give him the story? Do you give them the story written down, or do you give it with you record your voice?
Me recording my voice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Rick, you're never just looking at words. You're actually, so you're hearing the way that Zach's phrasing and shit. So do you use that to help you with the rhythms? And?
Yeah. I guess actually the two in question on the day, Zach, maybe 2 a.m. or whatever, just started sending me cell phone recordings of these, or the recordings via text message. And for Mr. Claus, I think there might have been a few just things sitting around, but it's pretty much been directly like plug in the voice, mess with that a bit first, and then start the music. So yeah, instead with the two in question today, yeah, definitely like in almost entirely 100% words first, music second.
Words are like the informer. It's the rebarb.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you know, I'm always interested in that kind of thing. A lot of people, words are last, but I think with collaborations like this, especially over distances, it makes a lot of sense for the words.
Well, we're really big into the Frank Sinatra Nelson Riddle combo there. So, and I think that's that kind of music that's really the orchestration just shaped around the voice. So there's that's one of the factors that we're striving for, I think. Although I think that I probably have buried Zach more than I like sometimes.
Oh, that's interesting. Who ends up mixing it?
It's pretty much just been me once he gets me those recordings, at least with the, you know, with the clause and the documentary and the baseball one.
Right. Okay.
But we've done a different Bananaham. That was the exact opposite, just to kind of turn it around. That was the music first, so then Zach just did some advertisements for Axe and Blade Incorporated there on top of it.
Well, you know what? On a future show, I got to play this Bananaham. How many parts is it?
Eight or nine.
So it's as big as these guys.
Yeah, I'd say it's about half an hour, 30, 35 minutes, something like that, I'd say.
Yeah, and there's a boardroom meeting on the album as well.
A boardroom meeting?
It was originally commissioned. We outsourced it, but to Axe and Blade Industry or Incorporated, but ended up having to own it ourselves.
Like an a cappella deal?
Yeah, like, trying to cameo ourselves under different industry name, and it just didn't work because just too transparent for that, I think.
Business fell apart.
Well, look, Peter Sellers did it. We're talking about, yeah, multiple roles, right, for the same piece. I guess Frank, who was it? I was talking to somebody about Wizard of Oz. Frank Morgan, right? He's a couple. He's the wizard, and he's also the guy selling shit. Right, he drops down in the fucking balloon.
That's right. Yeah, I'd say that. I'd say that pretty much sums us up.
Okay.
I'd say Rick is both Dorothy and the Cowardly Lion, and I'm both the Tin Man and the Wicked Witch of the East and the West.
Well, this is another thing we discussed.
You're also Dorothy, and yeah.
This was another thing I discussed with you that. The books are different than the movie. In the movie, the farmhands are actually those fucking Lion and Tin Man and Scarecrow.
Right. It's like a dream. She gets like knocked out.
Right. And in a way, she's having a coming of age. You know, I don't know. I think the main love interest is Toto. But look, we're at the end of the first hour here. December 25, 2020. This is why Peter Show, special guest Rick Weaver, Zach Koons. Hold tight for hour two. December 25, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pete Rose Show.
We'll be right back. One, two, three, four. Ain't exactly normal at the North Pole. The ice cap is melting as an ozone hole. The workshop's flooded, Frosty's wasting away. Be a puddle and some trash in a couple more days. And Mrs. Claus is desperate to try to save her home. She tried to raise FEMA on the telephone. 12 days on hold, three reindeer died. FEMA sent a trailer with formaldehyde. Santa, get a job.
early. And not to say there's a better way, but the bill I pay.
Everybody's gone to the North Pole to see Santa. And all the houses are empty and there's not a single soul in town. Cause everyone's sharing their Christmas cheer with old Saint Nick face to face this year. That's the best explanation I have found. It's Christmas time, and everybody's gone to the North Pole to see Santa. And I didn't get the memo, and I feel like such a dunce. But that explains why the streets are deserted, and the TV channels and the radio stations are nothing but static. I just wonder what the reason has been for the rest of the past 5 months.
Watch for Pedro Show. Start the second hour off with some Xmas songs here. Silent Night from Gareth Sager and the Christmas United Nation Thrust Society. And he calls this an Xmas special. It was just for this year, people. Johnny Mark and the Ricks with Santa Gets a Job. Or no, Santa Get a Job. It's a declarative. It's not an interrogative. Sorry about this band had the late, great Frankie Onway from the Suburban Lawns. A major stroke just killed him like that a couple of years ago. And he's a beautiful guy. Well, that's why we want to get these projects in you. We don't know how much time we got, right? So we got to kick it like Cato. The Hellbeans with four-letter word, hashtag Xmas. The Space Pony out of Ravenna, Italy with L1XT, which is a trippy title because he keeps singing about it's Christmas time, but somehow it's connected. You got to give the guy respect for singing in English, right? And Pat Ruthensmeer, right? A guitar man for the Germs on his second solo record called Xmas Song. Earwig Deluxe with Home for Christmas. Bob Lee with his Christmas proj where he likes to do hard rock songs and put words about this time. So this is Black Sabbath, but not Hole in the Sky, Sled in the Sky. And then finally, Alice Bag with Christmas is Just Another Day, which is for her buddy who had to spend Christmas in prison. So I thought this was all relevant. But now what we're going to do is this documentary. This don't have anything to do with Christmas, right, guys?
I think it has something to do with the spirit of Christmas. It's got that, as opposed to the transmogrification of Mrs. Claus, a lot more wholesome and joyous and tender and warm. So while not being a Christmas album in name or maybe not even in subject, in spirit, I think it kind of is a Christmas album. I look at it that way.
Like Rick calls it the documentary.
Yeah.
Now, actually, the 1990 Reds is kind of a documentary, right?
Yeah, they're all probably closer to radio plays than they are. I think we're moving more and more in that direction, but they're probably all closer to radio plays than they are quote unquote albums. I'd say at this point.
Are either you guys familiar with ZBS Media?
Yeah. I think, actually, you turned me on to that.
From upstate New York, right? In the early 70s, yeah. Meatball Fulton. And he called them mind movies. And they would go to a location and record ambient sounds and then come home and make a story around them sounds. You got a trip. But anyway, this piece here, what's the title of it? Because I got seven different parts, but...
The title, the official title.
Is it Eros in the Natural World?
It's the first part of probably several different faux nature documentaries that I think are planned right now. But yeah, part one is called Eros in the Natural World. Yeah.
And Eros is the god of love, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's listen, people. This is the debut, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's fresh out of the box right there.
Okay, people, get all wet with it.
I firmly believe, my very good friends, that today is a new day. I genuinely believe that today is a new day. I sincerely believe that today. I honestly believe that today is a new day. I strongly believe that today is a new day. I strongly believe that. is the miracle. I certainly believe my very good friend that today is a new day.
Hello there, my very dear friends and fellow intrepid voyagers. My name is Zach Coons, and for the foreseeable future, I am going to be your host and guide as we travel together through an entirely new world. On this journey, we will brave encounters with wild, savage creatures who bare their teeth and bristle their fur. We will encounter the natives of the dark continent inside ourselves, who live lives that startle us with beauty, and who speak dazzling new languages. And most importantly, we will begin to see the realities that we've convinced ourselves of as illusory, and so discover that life stripped of concepts is playful, creative, vital, meaningful, and throbbing with joy and ecstasy. I'm very excited to accompany you, my friends, so let's make haste to begin our travels. So longingly and lovingly arches toward the bluest summer skies, it is often called Himero's attendant by lovesick teenagers overwhelmed by the first blooming flush of desire creeping into their trembling, vulnerable hearts. And where does this exquisite wildflower call its home? Clothed in the impenetrable darkness of a grotto in the woods somewhere? On the curving shoreline of a solitary river winding its way toward the sea? No, sir. The Astridius climbs toward the heavens in the disturbed soil of waste grounds. Firebirds, railroad shoulders, vacant lots, and roadsides are where this delicate creature germinates. We can learn a lot from where the Astridius chooses to reside, I think. We do well to not judge anything or any place, ugly or unseemly, in this world, my friends. We can never know what ingredients are necessary to nourish the tender seed that sprouts to become a graceful, finite expression of infinity. Perched with such noble bearing on the branch of an ancient elm tree is none other than the Chlorvorin clingulus, more commonly referred to as the Cupidian westbill. The The most fascinating characteristic that this scarce avian being possesses is its highly unique and complex mating ritual. The male of the species carves a yoni, an ancient Sanskrit symbol that represents sacred feminine energy, into the bark of a tree to attract a lively mate. What follows is a ritual that nearly perfectly models the Yoni Linga Mudra, a tantric hand gesture meant to portray a sacred union of the two genital organs that have united to attain a higher knowledge of ultimate reality. To achieve this profoundly intricate pose, the mates are required to dislocate tiny bones in their wings so that they can enfold one another more perfectly and draw ever closer to their lover. Ultimately, they become indistinguishable one from the other in their ballet of lives and running, and call to mind a passage from William Emerson. The vast flush possesses them. The many are no more. This, the great cloud erasing distinction. If we split the wood and find divinity everywhere, as Christ suggests in the Gospel of Thomas, what does this lovely ritual tell us about how to approach our own sexuality, I wonder? Of this playful little mineral closer, we can surely see how it got its aphrodisiacal moniker. Firstly, to studying the smooth curved conchoidal fracture and otherworldly light yellow hue, we can already tell we're dealing with a very esoteric beast. The gravity is also very unusual for quartz, whose general density is between 2.5 and 3 on scale with other minerals. Cantharitic quartz is remarkably light, averaging between 1.4 and 1.7, making it nearly as light, or in some cases lighter, than borax. When we begin examining its chemical properties even closer, we get to the really fascinating facets of this mineral. The compound that it's composed of is remarkably similar to the steroid sexual hormones that human beings manufacture in the glands of the endocrine system and give the appearance of being very much alive when observed closely by trained specialists. There are a number of tales in ancient erotic handbooks about young men putting the cantharitic quartz in their mouths and keeping it in during their first sexual experience. It was thought that this would align them with the purpose of the experience and banish their fears of impotence or clumsiness. Considering the high concentration of androgen-like material, this seems to be less a silly superstition by backwards archaic civilizations, and more a highly intelligent ritual enacted by a people who were very sensitive and attuned to the natural rhythms and processes of our Earth. So let's return to the original question, shall we? Can a mineral experience ecstasy? Thomas Aquinas says aptly, "Every love causes ecstasy. To suffer ecstasy means to be placed outside oneself." This suggests that the mineral which is partially responsible for the ecstasy in the amorous youths must experience at least a rudimentary ecstasy itself, because in giving forth freely of what it has been endowed with, it transcends itself. The principle is much the same, I find, with the human phenomenon. When we are absolutely open and liberally dispense our remarkable gifts to others, our very state of consciousness shifts from scarcity to abundance, and ecstasy becomes our common state. Let's dig in the rich, fertile earth to discover the roots of a very remarkable creature. Because to truly know a being requires an insatiable curiosity about their hidden, thirsting core that works tirelessly in silence to draw nourishment from an unknown source. The creature we'll investigate today has sensationally unique properties as it bridges the gap between the animal and vegetable kingdoms. Meet the Corona lizard. At first glance, it is not radically distinct from other lizards. The beady, equal-sized scales, four stubby legs, and their egg-laying reproduction method all tie them quite neatly into their species type. What makes them so singular is that their tail is rooted in the earth, and they draw their sustenance from the soil. What this means for this wondrous critter is that once it has chosen its base, it must stay there for the rest of its life. Let's investigate this process a little further. Firstly, the Corona lizards, like many divine beings from age-old myths, reproduce by parthenogenesis, i.e. virgin birth. In a myth orally circulated amongst Pawnee Indian tribes, the storyteller speculated that a beast who made its home entirely underground was sent by the Great Father in the sky to inseminate the Corona. The beast carried out the celestial instructions to ensure the continuity of the species, because all creatures on the face of the earth or under it have a great destiny to fulfill, the Great Father explained. The Corona lizards are all born female, the only reptile to display this feature. The mother lays an egg and guards it with an eternal wakefulness until her daughter emerges by softly chewing through the membrane of the egg and crawls out into this material world. With no ceremony and no apparent deliberation, the tiny Corona daughter leaves her mother immediately and ventures out in search of a place to bury her tiny tail. This hunt usually lasts 3 to 4 weeks, and a really astounding fact is that the Corona is absolutely sightless and doesn't start developing her sight until she finds the hospitable spot to sink her tail into the ground. The Corona doesn't consume the flesh of insects, plants, or other animals, and so where this creature derives her nourishment from is an absolute mystery that baffles even the experts. Once she discovers the place that she will make her earthly abode, she burrows her scaly, corkscrewed tail into the ground. The expression on her face must mirror the adept as they achieve a state of samadhi, so serene and blissful she becomes as she merges with the earth. What do we have to learn from the Corona, friends? Is there some secret root organ in all of us that knows, like the Corona knows, where to draw the life-giving nectar from the invisible and changeless world beyond the world? entire cosmos is shivering with joy. It's our inheritance. You were made for joy, my friends. Illusion and conditioning are the fallen trees obscuring our path, the names of things. What must stay concealed when we name? Delight. Delight celebrates the shuddering beauty of everything that is. Delight revels in exaltation. Delight does not need to possess or harness or profit or name. Delight is our true estate. I want to introduce you to a new expression of life. There is no name for this. It has no features. It does not belong to the animal, vegetable, or mineral kingdom. There are no available concepts for you to attach to this being. It was created just this moment, and it is dripping with the freshness of a newborn universe. I invite you to admire this being with me, to delight in its incomprehensible symmetry. Always new lands to explore, new languages to be spoken to express the inexpressible. Silence seems to be the closest approximate. So I'll grow as quiet as an old-growth forest, and we can wander together, transfixed in wordless reverie.
Agree to be
allowing us into your homes and hearts and minds. We look forward to experimenting by your side again. Until then, may you thrive and wonder. Thank you.
Mike from Peter Show. That was it. Eros in the Natural World, people. And the name of the seven parts, the New Earth theme song, and an introduction to Eros in the Natural World, Coons and Weaver. Phalanx Astridius. Chlorvoran Ligamus. We got some Latin here. Okay. Carthoritic quartz. The Corona Lizard Delight. Hey, I got that one. And then finally, outro to Eros in the Natural World, Coons and Weaver. Okay. The big difference, well, obviously the subject matter, but in a way, you say they're similar. They're like documentaries, right?
I think so, yeah.
Now, this one was just recently done, right?
Just finished.
So for sure, the Santa Claus and the Reds one informed on this guy. But,
yeah.
Okay, but was it the same dealio, Rick? Did you get these fucking phone messages, memos, recorded voice memos? Okay.
Oh, yeah. My wife had just delivered our daughter when Zach was sending these files over, so I was in the hospital at the time. With Zach's voice coming through.
You were waiting in the waiting room?
Singing about the Corona Lizard.
You were waiting in the waiting room.
Yeah, definitely.
And pacing and doing some, ring around the rosy. Yeah, okay.
And a week later, he's like, when are they, how's that going? You got them yet? No, I made that up. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like Zach pumps this stuff out so fast that the turnaround. I'm like the slug on frog on the log there.
Okay, explain yourself, Zach. Is it just like what do you call this when the mind just flows? Stream of thought, stream of conscious.
Something like that. It's like I always have these themes in mind. Every album I ever do, be it with Rick or solo or with any other project, is always in my mind. There's a theme. There's something that I want to say, and I can never say it in one song. It has to be these series of songs that are a summation of this broader thing, or maybe the series of broader things that I'm usually failing to articulate. So it all comes from usually two or three bigger ideas and finding a way to put those into a theme where I try and get everything said that I want to say. I've never succeeded yet, and that's why I work so much, because I never feel like I succeed at all. So I just keep on working away. I mean, I usually write anywhere between 4 to 6 hours every single day. So
you think Rick ends up kind of the editor man? I mean, you want to give him more than you need?
No, he always uses every single thing. I edit. I would say I edit all the text, and then Rick doesn't edit any of the text. Not that I know of. I don't think you are.
You mean what you're saying? Nothing ends up on the deck.
Yeah, I would say that the last three things, like, really, neither one of us has tried to affect any side of the other, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you just pretty much gave me the words, and I pretty much sent you the music, and that was that. There's no...
Yeah, that's exactly how it is. I think maybe the one difference in this one between the other two is that I did record the theme song myself on this one. So I guess part of the intro... The only difference between the other two albums is part of the intro on this one. I did record and sing and play all the instruments on the little theme song that comes into it, right? Or did you add some? I don't think you added anything to that, Rick.
No, I didn't add anything to it, and I guess now I can't take credit for it.
That's okay. Seems pretty fucking whole to me. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, December 25, 2020, Dishwap Peter Show. Special guest Rick Weaver. Zach Koons. Hold tight for hour three. December 25, 2020, it's the third hour of the Life from Pedro show.
when it's Christmas time once again.
never know how he came to life one day. There must have been some magic in that old silk hat they found. For when they placed it on his head, he began to dance around. Frosty the Snowman was alive as he could be. And the children say he could laugh and play just as the same as you and me. So he said, let's run and we'll have some fun before I melt away. Down to the village with a broomstick in his hand, running here and there all around the square. Take every if you can.
Pedro Show. We started the third hour with Mold Omen, Baltimore, with Come All Ye Faithful. These are all versions, right, of traditional things. Crane with Christmas Time Once Again. Now, I think his is a ridge. Healers. Okay, this is Jamie in Illinois. Almost Indiana, right on the border. Grinch, Welcome Xmas, Trim Up the Tree. He's got a one-man band called Healers, and he did a bunch of treatments of some traditional. Poor Christmas. Deck the Halls, Silver Bells, Good King Wenceslas, finally Frosty the Snowman. Okay, do you guys got another big piece in the cooker?
Yeah, actually, Rick, do you want to talk about it? I've been blabbering away. I'll let Rick explain it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you blabber, and I'm glad to blabber myself, too, so I guess I'll blabber. Yeah, correct me if I miss anything. I guess the next one's, U.S. government is going to maroon us to an island in the Gulf of California or somewhere of the like, maybe Pacific or maybe hopefully Patagonia. I don't think we get a choice in the matter. So Zach and I are going to be living the exiled island life on the next one, with all the fun flora and fauna and field recordings and all that. So that's that one. Eventually, what you got the sort of one we've been working towards a little bit is it's called Check Please, which is finds us in a diner asking for the check. I guess that's sort of the starting point of that. but you know more about that one than I do. God, what else? Skydiving Academy with Mockcock, hopefully. I mean, maybe that's just like something that I hope that is a reality, the Skydiving Academy.
That's something I can't do because of my knee situation. But I would love I'd love to hear a piece build around it.
Definitely, yeah, I'm definitely not going to skydive for the sake of the album. I'll just pretend to have done it.
So, well, it seems like the fucking MO for the other ones was the big piece comes from Zach, but these guys are different. You, like, are working it out conceptually ahead of time?
I'd say that Check Please is kind of in your hands, Zach, right? I mean,
yeah,
we came up with a catchphrase together, and we used it, in a diner once or twice, at a Denny's maybe. But you kind of got the meat and potatoes on that one.
Yeah, I'll be writing closer. That one will be far closer to a radio play. We'll have a bunch of different parts. Hopefully, one for you in there as well, Mike. If we can talk.
I'm ready. No, you've talked me into it. I'm. You want me to, I got to sell some flowers. Right?
Well,
something kind of commercial where you want me involved with a floral thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll actually be for, that'll be one of the commercials for the album that you just played. That'll be one of the commercials for Eros in the Natural World.
Oh, okay. Jesus Christ. Well, I fucked that up. So I'm actually going to be part of that other one. I know you asked me to be, and I'm there for you, man. You know, I'm, like a bass player. If you got nothing to stick to, you're just a puddle. So wherever you need me, I'm there. Especially if it's some kind of spiel. Let's play the last music for this edition.
sugar taste. When the spring is late, it's winter in the marshmallow world.
Thank you. mean, you can change an idea, and changing a belief is tricky. People die.
Will all these be just as done as we have been while we stand heart to heart and hand in hand?
Same as God, 50-50. Same as the horned clover and the horseshoe, the wishing well and the rabbit's foot. Same as the mojo man. Same as the voodoo lady who tells you your fortune by squeezing the goat's testicles. It's all the same. 50-50. So just pick your superstition, sit back, make a wish, and enjoy yourself.
I think I'm part of a greater wisdom than we will ever understand. The big electronic truth doesn't posit, doesn't reward, it doesn't even judge. It just is. And so are we for a little while.
Wafra Pedro, so last music for this edition, we had the Healers, Jamie doing It's a Marshmallow World in the Winter, but not Pedro. Fuck, you can kayak, right? 70 degrees today. Jingle Bells from Jamie's. This is the only thing where he ain't playing. He's got a buddy with guitar with him on this one. Somebody's doing some dishes. Carol of the Bells, the Little Drummer Boy, and then something I'm part of is... If I had to be part of this Xenochronic AMM All-Stars, and it's got England slang and stuff, so it's like gibber gobber, but it's supposed to be about Xmas, you know, whatever the fuck. And then finally, we wish you a Merry Xmas about from the Healers, and truly from Watt and Pedro to all you, and also on behalf of my guests, well, good feelings, you know, right? We don't have to talk about how fucked up things are, because, yeah, we're living it. But in the meantime, right, the lemonade's come, so we're going to make the lemons come, so we're going to make some lemonade. And where can people find out about you? I know there's the Cincinnati Reds has got a Bandcamp page.
Yeah, they're actually all on everything we released over the last, let's say, 7 years is all on our Bandcamp page.
Okay.
It includes the 1990 Cincinnati Reds, but also the Transmogrification of Santa Claus.
Banana Ham?
Banana Ham's on okay. there.
Well, let's give them, give them the URL of that Bandcamp site.
Rick, do you actually know? Rick runs it.
Okay, yeah. I feel like there's something missing from there, but Coons and Weaver... .bandcamp.com.
Yeah, so we got to spell that, people. KOUNSANDWEAVER .bandcamp.com. You go there, they got all this music, all this kind of, it's righteous shit. It's a very happening rabbit hole to fucking tumble down into and get lost in. I love it. And I love what you're doing. And just, you know, there's so many people playing at playing. You know what? Why not genuinely play? Why do you have to play it playing? You know what I mean? Us humans get into these levels of, you know, jive that kind of bums me out. But with you guys, I just love it. I fall into it. And it reminds me a little bit, like we were talking, Rick, with that ZBS media. And that's at ZBS.org. When I was a young teenager, right, early 70s, and I started hearing these mind movies, there's something about things that you take in through the ear, in the ear holes, and try to make a sense of, versus things coming in through the eye holes. And I don't know. Have you ever thought about visuals to go with these things?
We actually do have a couple of... We do have a couple of pretty unusual videos that we've filmed together over the years. We have one called Boneyard Boneheads.
I heard Rick mention that you guys were howling in the Bonehead Boneyard.
Well, but you got plans for animation for the Nature Doc, right?
Isn't yeah.
like a long-term goal.
Okay, so it is going to get realized. Okay, that's great. One time I used that phrase, I was with Jay Maskus helping him 20 years ago, and we were looking for Jim Morrison in Paris, right? And it was the wrong fucking boneyard. It was Montmartre. It wasn't Perche, right? But it's one north and not the east one. So I said, man, it's the wrong boneyard, boneheads. And like the tour boss could never forget that. He had to say that fucking almost every week to me. So be careful what you're fucking. But that's a weird parallel that I identify with you guys. That's beautiful. When you get your next ones out, will you come back on the show and we can do the big reveal?
Would love to.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I love what you're doing. Please keep on keeping on.
Such an honor. Thank you so much,
right
Mike.
Right back. People, it's been December 25, 2020 edition of Peter Show. Merry Xmas. Keep your powder dry.